Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the program today, Ashley Thompson and I tell you about some important international landmarks. As always, we close our show with an American story. But right now, we have a report about a school for the blind. It recently announced a huge effort to train teachers around the world. Here is Mario Ritter with that report.
A school for the blind in Massachusetts has announced an effort to train 1 million teachers for disabled children around the world. The Perkins School for the Blind launched the effort as United Nations members gathered this week for a meeting on the rights of disabled persons. The goal of the meeting was to bring attention to the issue of including and educating people with disabilities, especially children. Experts say more than 6 million children with more than one disability are not being served by education systems around the world. A disability could be blindness, deafness, or other inabilities to do things. Dave Power is the president of Perkins School for the Blind. The school is the oldest academic institution for people who cannot see or who are blind and cannot hear. He said, children with more than one disability often do not receive an education. These children, for the most part, don't get an education, something on the order of 90%, said Power. He and other experts say children with more than one disability have a lot of potential, but they need the right education to realize it. Gopal Mitra is an expert on disabilities at UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund. He says there are many barriers to disabled children. The stigma and discrimination that exists around disabilities, it is the attitudinal barrier, it has a wide-ranging impact, he said. A lack of resources is another problem. Governments do not set aside enough money for people with disabilities. Also, families often lack the ability to provide an education for disabled children. Mitra said, within the family, often parents do not see the value of educating the child who cannot see or cannot hear. Roseanne Silberman is an educator. She said, I think that the greatest challenge across the world is to get the government involved in the need for teacher training. This week, Perkins School for the Blind announced its effort to train 1 million teachers by 2030 to educate children with multiple disabilities. Richard Delaney is the executive director of Perkins International, a division of Perkins School for the Blind. He described the effort as providing important training to teachers. We want to do that in a way that supports teachers who are in public schools and teachers that are in special schools, so all children will have a quality education, Delaney said. He noted the program will have 3 levels, with courses lasting from 2 days to 9 months. These classes would train teachers in international standards. Perkins School for the Blind has a history of training teachers from other countries to work with blind, deaf and blind, and low vision children. Dave Power now says the school wants to standardize its program to reach more people. The school is seeking to fund the program by combining government support with private donations. Because we already have the knowledge and know-how and have done it, we can do it very efficiently, he said. Another issue discussed at the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities was women with disabilities. The World Report on Disability estimates that 1 in 5 women are likely to experience a disability in their lifetimes. It says disabled women and girls face many barriers and discrimination that prevent them from getting education, economic opportunities, and from taking part in politics. One success story is Maricar Marquez, who was born deaf. At the age of 7, doctors said she had Usher syndrome, a disease that causes a loss of sight over time. Today, she is deaf and blind. Her sister has the same condition. Although she was born in the Philippines, Marquez's family moved to Canada. There, both girls received specialized education. Marquez did not listen to people who said people with disabilities cannot learn. She went to college and earned a master's degree. Had I not gotten the services I did, I would not be where I am, she said, using sign language. I'm Mario Ritter.
The travel website TripAdvisor has named Cambodia's ancient Angkor Wat as the top landmark in the world. The website uses travelers' reviews to choose winners each year. Angkor Wat received 33,000 five-star reviews in the last 12 months. It also topped TripAdvisor's list of landmarks in 2015. Angkor Wat is the world's largest religious monument. It includes temples, reservoirs, and canals. The website World Archaeology describes Angkor Wat as the most extensive urban complex in the pre-industrial world. Built between 802 and 1431, the city of Angkor was the center of the Khmer rule in what is now Cambodia. Power struggles, foreign invasion, and climate change led to the Khmer rule's downfall. Last year, 2.2 million tourists visited Angkor Wat. TripAdvisor reviews call it majestic and like absolutely nothing else I've ever seen. Here are a few other landmarks that made TripAdvisor's top 25 list.
Just after Angkor Wat on the list is the United Arab Emirates' Sheikh Zayed Grand Mosque Center. The center in Abu Dhabi is considered one of the UAE's most important and beautiful places of worship. With minarets, reflecting pools, and gold details, the mosque is extraordinary both inside and outside. The mosque is named for the first president of the UAE, Sheikh Zayed bin Sultan Al Nahyan. It was built between 1996 and 2007.
The one Russian landmark to make the list is St. Petersburg's Church of the Savior of Spilled Blood. It came in at number 6. The Russian-style church is colorful and detailed. One TripAdvisor user wrote, "The whole church is a piece of art, with mosaics covering every inch." The church was built on the place where revolutionaries killed Emperor Alexander II in 1881. That is where the church's name comes from. Construction on the church began 2 years after Alexander's murder. It was completed in 1907. The church fell into disrepair during the Russian Revolution in 1917 and later during World War II. Repair efforts began in the 1970s. It opened to the public 27 years later.
Coming in at number 7 on TripAdvisor's list is China's Great Wall at Mutianyu. The Great Wall once stretched for more than 13,000 kilometers. About 8,000 kilometers still stand today. Mutianyu is among the best-kept parts of the wall. It was first built in the middle 1500s. It is the Great Wall's longest restored part open to visitors. Mutianyu is about 60 kilometers from Beijing. It has 23 watchtowers and is surrounded by forests and little waterways. While many tourists visit this historic place each day, it still receives fewer visitors than some other parts close to Beijing, like the famous Badaling area.
The highest-rated U.S. landmark on TripAdvisor's list is the Golden Gate Bridge. It came in at number 11. The famous structure stretches 2,788 meters. It opened to traffic on May 27, 1937. It is one of the world's most impressive engineering successes. More than 110,000 cars travel across the Golden Gate Bridge every day. It is named after the waterway it crosses. The Golden Gate Strait flows between the Pacific Ocean and the San Francisco Bay. The bridge links the city of San Francisco with Marin County.
For our final landmark today, we head to South America. Coming in at number 20 is Argentina's book-filled El Ateneo Grand Splendid. When it first opened in Buenos Aires in 1919, the Grand Splendid was a performing arts theater. Some of Argentina's most famous tango dancers performed there. Later, it became a movie theater. Reminders of its past still remain, including red stage curtains, painted ceilings, and theater boxes. But Instead of rows of chairs where the audience once sat, there are now rows of bookshelves. The theater boxes are now small reading rooms. And the stage has been turned into a cafe. Grand Splendid became a bookstore in 2000. At the time, city officials were considering tearing down the historic building. Today, it is one of the best-known bookstores in the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Katie Weaver. Now it's time for our program, American Stories. Today, we listen to the last part of Love of Life by Jack London. The story tells about gold seekers crossing dangerous frozen land in Canada. They are desperate for food and shelter. The story examines the human will to survive.
In the afternoon, the man came to a track. It was that of another man who did not walk, but who dragged himself on his hands and knees. The man thought it might be Bill, but he thought about it without any interest. He had no curiosity. Feeling and emotion had left him. He was no longer able to feel pain, yet the life that was in him drove him ahead. He was very tired, but it refused to die. It was because it refused to die that he still ate muskeg berries and small fish, drank his hot water, and kept a careful eye on the sick wolf. He followed the track of the other man who dragged himself along. Soon he came to the end of it. There were a few freshly cleaned bones where the grass was marked by the footprints of many wolves. He saw a moose-skin bag, exactly like his own. It had been torn by sharp teeth. He picked it up, although its weight was almost too much for his weak fingers. Bill had carried it to the end. Now he would have the last laugh. He would live and carry it to the ship in the shining sea. He laughed aloud, making an inhuman sound, and the sick wolf howled with him. The man ceased suddenly. How could he laugh at Bill, if that were Bill? If those bones so pinky white and clean were Bill? He turned away. Bill had deserted him, but he would not take the gold, nor would he eat Bill's bones. Bill would have done so, however, had their situations been exchanged. He came to a pool of water. Bending over it in search of fish, he threw his head back as if he had been struck. He had caught sight of his face in the water. So awful was it that his feelings were stirred long enough to be shocked. There were three fish in the pool, which was too large to empty. After several attempts to catch them in his tin container, he stopped. He was afraid, because of his great weakness, that he might fall and sink into the water. It was for this reason, too, that he did not trust himself to ride down the river atop one of the many logs to be found along its banks. That day he lessened the distance between him and the ship by 3 miles. The next day he traveled only 2 miles. Because he was now dragging himself on his hands and knees, as Bill had done. At the end of the fifth day, the ship was still 7 miles away. He was unable to travel as much as a mile a day. However, the summer weather continued, and he continued to move toward the ship. And always the sick wolf coughed at his heels. His knees had become red meat like his feet. Although he bound them with the shirt from his back, it was a red track he left behind him on the grass and stones. Once, glancing back, he saw the wolf licking his bloody track hungrily. He saw clearly what his own end might be, unless he could kill the wolf. Then began as awful an event as has ever been told. Two sick creatures, dragging their dying bodies across a wasteland and hunting each other's lives. Had it been a well wolf, it would not have mattered so much to the man. But the thought of feeding the mouth of that nearly dead thing was hateful. His mind had begun to wander again, and he was troubled by hallucinations. His reasonable moments grew shorter. He was awakened once from a faint sleep by a cough close to his ear. The wolf leaped back, losing its footing and falling in its weakness. It was a funny sight, but he could not laugh. Nor was he afraid. He was too far gone for that. But his mind was, for the moment, clear, and he lay and considered. The ship was no more than 4 miles away. He could see it quite well when he rubbed his eyes. He could also see the white sail of a small boat cutting the water of the shining sea. But he could never drag himself those 4 miles. He knew that, and was very calm about the fact. He knew that he could not travel another half a mile. And yet, he wanted to live. It was unreasonable that he should die after all he had been through. Fate asked too much of him. And dying, he could not accept death. It was madness, perhaps. But in the very grasp of death, he refused to die. He closed his eyes and tried to keep himself calm. He struggled against the awful desire for sleep that threatened him. It was much like a sea, this deadly sleepiness. It rose and rose, mastering his entire self bit by bit. Sometimes he was almost lost, swimming through its waters with a weakening effort. Then, by some strange power of the soul, his will would strike out more strongly against it. Without movement, he lay on his back. He could hear slowly drawing nearer and nearer the sound of the sick wolf's breathing. It came closer, always closer, and he did not move. It was beside his ear. The dry tongue moved across his face. His hands struck out. Actually, he had willed them to strike out. The fingers were curved, but they closed on empty air. Quickness requires strength, and the man had not his strength. The quiet waiting of the wolf was awful. The man's waiting was no less awful. For half a day he lay without motion, fighting off sleep. He waited for the thing that was to feed upon him, and upon which he wished to feed. Sometimes the sea of sleep rose over him, and he dreamed long dreams. But always through it all, waking and dreaming, he waited for the noisy breath and the feel of the tongue. This time he did not hear the breath. He slipped slowly from some dream to feel the tongue along his hand. He waited. The teeth pressed softly, then more firmly. The wolf was using its last strength in an effort to sink its teeth into the food for which it had waited so long. But the man, too, had waited long. The hand closed on the wolf's mouth, Slowly, while the wolf struggled weakly, the other hand moved across the wolf's body. 5 minutes later, the whole weight of the man's body was on top of the wolf. The hands had not sufficient strength to grasp the wolf about the throat until it died, but the face of the man was pressed close to the throat of the wolf, and the mouth of the man was full of hair. At the end of half an hour, the man felt some warm drops of blood in his throat. It was not pleasant. It was like hot, melted metal being forced into his stomach, and it was forced by his will alone. Later, the man rolled on his back and slept. There were some scientists traveling on the fishing ship Bedford. From where they stood on the ship, they could see a strange object on the shore. It was moving down the beach toward the water. They were unable to decide what it was. Being men of science, they climbed into a smaller boat and went ashore to examine it. And they saw something that was alive, but which could hardly be called a man. It was blind and did not know what it was doing. Its movements produced little effect, but still it continued to drag itself across the ground at the rate of about 20 feet an hour. 3 weeks later, the man lay in a bed on the fishing boat. With tears streaming down his face, he told who he was and what he had experienced. He also talked without meaning about his mother and a home in California among the flowers. The days were not many after that, when he sat at table with the scientists and the ship's officers. He delighted in the sight of so much food and watched it carefully as it went into the mouths of others. With the disappearance of each mouthful, an expression of sorrow came into his eyes. He was not mad, however. He hated those men at mealtimes. He was afraid that there would not be enough food. He inquired of the cook, the cabin boy, the captain, concerning the food supply. They reassured him numerous times, but he would not believe them, and went into the kitchen to see with his own eyes. It was noticed that the man was getting fat. He grew bigger with each day. The scientists shook their heads and gave their opinions on the problem. They limited the amount of food given to the man at his meals, but still his weight increased. The seamen smiled. They knew. And when the scientists decided to observe the man, they learned the reason. They saw him walk about the ship after breakfast. Like a man begging with an outstretched hand, he approached a seaman. The seaman smiled and gave him a piece of bread. He grasped it and looked at it as a greedy man looks at gold. Then he put it inside his shirt. He received similar gifts from other smiling seamen. The scientists were careful. They allowed him to continue. But they secretly examined his bed. It was lined with bread. Every inch of space was filled with bread. Yet he was not mad. He was preparing for another possible famine, that was all. He would recover from it, the scientist said. And he did, even before the Bedford sailed into San Francisco Bay.
That's all the time we have today, but tune in tomorrow for another Learning English program on The Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Thanks for listening.